Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Talking about our vaccine cards earlier, and somebody reminded us of what Peter Greenberg said on Eye on Travel on this little radio station of ours this weekend. Take a picture of your vax card front and back. Take a picture of your vax card. Dr. Robert Murphy's on a line, professor of infectious diseases and the executive director of the Institute for Global Health at Northwestern. Doctor, it's John Williams. Thanks for joining us on WGN.
Oh, thanks for having me.
7 million doses administered of the Johnson & Johnson vaccine, 6 cases, 1 death. Is this an overreaction? Should we, in fact, still be giving out the J&J?
Well, I think it's very smart that there's a pause until they figure out what's going on. The 6 cases that are reported here are all on women and relatively young women, ages 18 to 48. All occurring 6 to 13 days after their vaccine. Remember, the Johnson & Johnson is just one dose. And so it's a specific, it looks like it's a specific group of people that are getting infected. That puts it at, if there's 6.8 million people have received the vaccine, that's one, this reaction is one in 566,000 people. So it's pretty rare. Much more likely that somebody would have died of COVID.
Which was what I was thinking of, but I also think you're making an interesting point. Yeah, that's if you divide the number of women into the total number of vaccines, but I wonder if you said, okay, of women 18 to 40, how many people got the vaccine?
It's still, yeah, right. That's the way that I'm sure the FDA and the company are actually looking at the data right now.
Yeah.
Who is it really at risk for this? This is a very rare complication, and it's a very rare event overall. Of all strokes, it's only 0.5% of all strokes.
I'm sorry, what does this have to do with strokes? I don't get your point there.
It is a stroke.
Oh, that's what they're suffering
from. It's a form of a stroke, yeah.
The blood clot.
Cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. It's a blood clot in one of the vessels in the brain.
Well, is there something unique about the chemistry or the body of a young female different than the rest of the population? Why would young women be the object of this complication?
Well, that of course, is a really good question. If you look... I am not a hematologist, blood clotting specialist, but just a brief perusal of the condition. Some of the risks include pregnant women, women on contraceptives, women taking estrogen replacement, women who have just had a baby. Women are somewhat at an increased risk of this very rare disorder, which only occurs in 5 out of every 1 million people per year.
So the incidence then of this in the Johnson & Johnson population is actually pretty high. In the general population, it doesn't happen that often. When you give young women the J&J vaccine, it happens a lot more often.
Well, you have 3.4 million people versus 5 per million per year. So if you look for a whole year, you would it's still a small number.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I guess that's the takeaway. I mean, I just heard this and I thought, oh, gee, this is an abundance of caution that is maybe too cautious, because if I were a public health administrator, not a young woman or not married to a young woman, not the parent of a young woman, but if I were just thinking about the global case, I would say let's continue to give it because more people are probably going to die of COVID than of this rare complication.
Well, that's what we call a risk-benefit analysis, and that's what have to be done, because if they stop giving this vaccine out right now to everybody, I mean— literally, tens of thousands of people are going to die from COVID.
Well, then, so, what do you say then about this CDC guidance?
Well, I mean, I think it's okay to pause. Matter of fact, I commend them, the FDA and the CDC. Let's see what it is. maybe we can just limit the use of the vaccine in groups that aren't at
risk
for getting this particular vaccine. And this could be true for all the vaccines. You know, they do these studies. They're huge, 20, 30, 40, 44,000 people in a clinical trial. That's an enormous amount. We're talking about side effects here that are occurring in 1.5 million to 1 million people.
And maybe not at all if we say, but we're not going to give it to women between the ages of 18 and 40.
Well, something like that. But, they need to really just dig into the data and figure out really what the risk is.
I have a couple
of questions. And then they'll open things up again.
Joe had a question for you, Doctor. You're on WGN Radio. Joe, what can we do for you? Hi.
Hi, John. Hi, Doc.
Hi.
My question is, of the six people that contracted or got the blood clot, mm-hmm. do they know if they were susceptible to clotting prior to that, or were they elderly women, or any certain scenario?
Yeah, we know they weren't elderly, but go ahead, Doctor.
Yeah, no, that's a really important question, because people that are at risk for blood clotting to start with, of course, are at risk for getting one of these kind of strokes, the cerebral venous sinus thrombosis. So that's a really good question. In those cases, so these are not elderly people, though, but they're mostly younger women, and it's temporarily related to taking the vaccine. If you look at all these cases that happen, these 5 out of 1 million per year, 80% of the people have a full recovery. You have to put that in the equation, too.
Thanks for the phone call. You know what bothers me about this is I do know some women who won't get the vaccine, and they're now going to say, see, I told you. And mm-hmm. I'm not, and I hate to empower what I think is a bad decision.
Well, right, because the trade-off is you have a very high chance of getting COVID. We're having an upswing in the number of cases, and everybody is not vaccinated yet. And so people are at risk, especially this younger group. It's a really big trade-off. We can't write this vaccine off at this particular point, that's for sure.
I know some teenagers that just contracted COVID-19, and I know at least one of them now has no sense of taste or smell.
Right.
Which is what my wife and I went through a year ago when we first got the COVID-19.
Mm-hmm.
Is that indicate a level of infection or a level of seriousness, or is that just kind of a random side effect of COVID-19?
Well, it's not random, because it's been shown already, even in the younger people who do relatively well, 1/3 of people who get COVID have some type of psychological or neurological symptom up to six months or more later. These kind of symptoms, like no taste, no smell, I mean, you think, oh, that's not so important. Well, how would you like to be eating food that tastes like cardboard for the rest of your life? It can affect your life. And there's other neurologic complications as well. So people shouldn't write this off as a mild disease. It's like the flu. I just get over it. Mm-hmm. This is just not the case.
Just by the way, for several years ago, my mom got bonked on the head, and to this day has zero taste and smell. That is her life that you just described, and it is devastating. You have to eat. You have to eat properly to have a healthy and long life. And when you have zero interest in food, it becomes a chore, and it's not easy. Nor, I guess, an inconsequential complication of it, but I just wondered, why does somebody have that and some don't? Why did I lose my sense of taste and smell and my friend did not? I don't understand that.
Nobody does. This has to be studied further to figure out why this is happening. We don't know.
A couple of questions for Dr. Murphy. Will children get half doses? What about very small adults? Say you weigh less than 100 pounds. Do they take that into account when they give you the vaccine?
They are doing studies in very young children, and the doses are adjusted for their size. As the kids get older, they get closer to the adult doses. Like in the studies that have been done so far, the 16-year-olds got the same dose. you know, it depends on the study being done, but in generally in smaller kids, they get lower doses.
One other thing, if I'm in a room of adults, say people even over the age of 65, but everybody's been vaccinated, everybody's been 2 weeks past their last shot, is it okay for us to embrace? Can we take our masks off?
Well, you know, this comes up a lot, and there are guidelines for this. You know, you have to have some benefit for getting through this whole vaccine process.
Because if I can't, then why did I stand in line?
And the CDC, there's been some back and forth about this. So they're saying that if you're in a household situation, in other words, a small group of people, mm-hmm. even with children who are not vaccinated,
yep.
That you can kind of go back to normal. But it's limited to household situations. Now, that doesn't mean that the same group of people couldn't meet outside the home. All right? I mean, what would be different? You know, there would be, mm-hmm. from an infectious disease standpoint, nothing would be different, but that's not the recommendation. What they're trying to limit from a public health standpoint is to keep the groups really small.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you still can get infected again. You know, remember, this doesn't work in 10% of people.
True.
Best of vaccinations, even the best of vaccines. And, you know, and these variants are coming in, and some of them are quite nasty. So, you know, when we're outside of the house, then we have to keep with the masks and the social distancing.
Yeah.
But when you're together at home, everyone vaccinated, quote, at low risk, unquote, then you can sort of let your guard down.
Dr. Robert Murphy, infectious disease specialist at Northwestern. He's also the executive director of the Institute for Global Health at Northwestern. Ain't it good we got folks like that? Doctor, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you.